I'm Rachel.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is
Uncut Geminis.
Woo! Today is it Uncut Geminis? I don't know. We're Uncut Geminis talking about the top 10 most iconic cancers.
Uncut cancers. Let's do it.
Uncut cancers. And we need some cancers to fill us in. We are so excited for this episode. We are going to break down our top 10 most iconic cancers.
Hell fucking yes.
Well, if you haven't already listened to our top 10 most iconic Geminis, go back, listen to that episode. We broke down top 10 most iconic Geminis, meaning who is iconic in our culture? What represents a Gemini? And today we're going to do that for cancers. We have fought it out. There are so many freaking cancers.
There really are. There are so many famous cancer actors. I think that looking through all of our famous people, a lot of actors, a lot of musicians, artists, people who, made their bread and butter. Yeah. Expressing their emotions, showing their feelings, very cancer.
Being vulnerable, putting some vulnerability out there. We got a lot of that. We got a lot of that today.
A lot of that.
Tell us more about the cancer essence. What does it mean to be a cancer, and how is that bringing us into our iconic cancers?
So cancer is such a sign associated with emotion, right? They are the feeling sign, the feel your feeling sign. So we're going to see people who are really in touch with that. That's going to be people who have made their careers in art, in romance, in poetry, in acting, in expressing their feelings. It's also people who are very romantic, people whose relationship to love has shaped the art that they've made.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that a lot with our top three.
Good point.
With our top three, I think there's a lot of romance in there. I think there's a lot of romance that could define those people's careers even, which is very interesting how romance, because I was romance defining your career. What are we, The Bachelor? But I really do think that is a lot of what we're going to get into today and what we're going to talk about. I think these people are very nurturing, the whole list, very gentle, but also we see some sneaky people come in there. And I'm curious to get into I think we have some antagonist on the list. I might as well say being iconic doesn't always mean that you are liked by everybody.
True. Absolutely true. I think also we have a really important cancer trait is being moody, right? They are one of the signs. They are ruled by a luminary. The luminary is what we refer to the sun and the moon as. But the moon is, it changes every single night. Right? It has more phases than any other ruling planet, / luminary.
Hey, get this. The moon changes every single night. Hey. I love that.
Hey, do you know the moon?
The moon?
Changes. She changes.
Every night. Every day. Every day it's different. Why are
she's
we
waxing,
not more excited
she's waning,
about-
she's full, she's new. She's in a different constellation every night. She's moving and grooving. And that's cancer.
We're on TikTok. We're on the internet. We're on the TV watching something different every day. You know what we could do? We could go outside. We could look at the moon.
Wow.
It's different every single day.
That's a good point. The moon gives us endless entertainment too.
Endless entertainment. And I think we're getting a lot of endless entertainment with this list.
Yes. Because that moodiness, right? Feeling volatile, feeling like your entire person is, like the tides ruled by the moon, you are constantly at the whims of that fateful mistress of the sky. But it makes you look prone to volatility, right?
Yeah.
When you've got all this change every single day, when you're so open to being receptive to the vibe, then that can make you prone to depression, right? We've got some sensitive people in this list. It can make it comes back to the romance thing, kind of very enamored by love and very called in when you are in love and on such a high in those moments. But just sort of the highs and lows, right? The epic highs and lows of high school football. I'm sorry, that's a quote from Riverdale that I can never get out of my head.
No, but there are epic highs and lows of high school football on this list. I'm a Cancer rising. So it's been really fun to go through this list and be like, oh man, I feel a lot of things just like these people be feeling a lot of things. And I really like my rising. I really like being in touch with my vulnerability and my emotions. And it's literally what I want to do every single day. And I get, and I don't understand how some people are like, yeah, I don't want to cry every day and think about my deepest, darkest feelings. And I'm like, that's weird.
Weird, weird,
weird.
Evasive. You know what that is? Evasive. You know, okay, yeah. Okay, Rachel, you know what I've noticed that I think you are very good at? That's very Cancer rising, is that I think you immediately pick up on a vibe shift. You know, like it's like when someone is like, oh, you were like kind of smiling differently like a few seconds ago. And now you're kind of like looking at the ground and like, what's up with that? Like, I want to know what's up with
that. What thoughts went through your head? What did you just think about? What when you were 12 years old just hit you? Let's talk about it. Let's get into that experience together. You know, yeah. I honestly am kind of sad for the people who didn't make the list because there are so many big people, like it's big crazy names. So I hope that you come and you DM us, you comment, you let us know what you think, especially if you are a Cancer, and you let us know at Uncut Gemini's Pod what we messed up on.
Because what are we missing?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people about to get shout out.
All right, let's get into it. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Drum roll, please.
Okay, number
10.
Sailor Moon. Ah! Oh my God.
Sailor Moon, iconic Cancer.
Iconic Cancer. So, Sailor Moon, character created by... Oh, fuck, I shouldn't even try this. I'm not going to try this. That's fucked up.
Naoko Takeuchi?
Takeuchi.
A Pisces.
As a manga, first episode of the show is called A Moon Star is Born. Y'all, Sailor Moon is like a superhero kind of. She is part teenage girl, part superhero. Gets her powers from the moon. Sailor Moon is incredible.
Talk about iconic Cancer. Talk about the moon changing every night. Talk about Sailor Moon already knows that. She changes constantly. She knows what's going on. Think of all the Sailor Moon quotes that are like, I am so emotional now. Like, and just like, giving
she's
it,
always
sharing
crying.
It.
She is always crying. She's like always just like having an outburst. She's so in touch with her emotionality, but she's also such a badass. And she's just like, always taking on the world, like she's always against the forces of evil. Sailor Moon is an absolute. She is an iconic Cancer, and she is canon a Cancer. The creator of this gave every person in the show and manga a birthday, meaning that like Sailor Mercury is a Virgo. Like they're it's all very like tied to astrology, and so Sailor Moon's personality was totally inspired by her canon birthday of being a Cancer and her powers as this moon star, which is incredible, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm somebody who doesn't even watch a ton of anime, but like, how could you not know Sailor Moon? Like, I feel like Sailor Moon is just one of those things that's just everywhere. Like, she is just, you're like, we were birthed into this world knowing who Sailor Moon is truly how I feel. And I think it's so cool that somebody is sharing their emotions, being vulnerable with the world, and be famous for that.
Like, yeah. And so sweet. Such a sweet. Such a sweetness, you know, which is what
yeah,
I
she
want
has
in
her
my
black
cancers.
Cat. She yeah, has her black cat with her, you know, and... Yeah, what a great icon to be represented by.
Yeah, Cancer is so like, so much of that nurturing ends up, I think, going into pets. Cancers are so obsessed with their pets. Every Cancer has fat pets, sorry. Like, all of
fat
their...
Fat pets?
Yes, I think every Cancer, like, overfeeds their pets because they... And I don't even care. Like, our dog has been told by the vet that we need to, like, cut back the treats. But, like... So this isn't even coming from a place of judgment. It's just that I think Cancers really love their pets.
It's just a fact. It is just, we only are talking facts here. So
I'm not trying to
fat
shame these pets. It's a place of love. I think food is love in many ways. For both me and for Cancers.
Truly, truly. And I just want to say, like, we are starting out really, really iconic here. Like, Sailor Moon is famous. Like, there are games, there are theme parks, there are video games, there are ice skating shows made after Sailor Moon. I just think that is, I don't know if I can say that for everybody on this list, to be honest. So
you can't do that. Well, now you know what? We've got icons on this list.
Icons, but I'm just saying we're starting with a really good icon, and Sailor Moon, top 10 most iconic Cancers, number 10 is Sailor Moon. Let's move on.
Our next icon is also very much about female empowerment. Number 9, Malala.
Famous, iconic cancer. That is the only thing she is known for. Oh my goodness, I'm just kidding.
Oh, brutal. We got to edit that out.
No, I'm
not serious.
We can take a joke on this podcast.
We can handle that. Malala, you know what's fucked up is that Malala was born in 1997. What have you done with your life?
Malala is a Nobel Prize laureate. And born in 1997. She has a Nobel Prize. Like, what?
Malala is, if you were born under a fucking rock, if you've been living under a rock, a Pakistani activist for female education. She was shot in the head by a Taliban gunman in an assassination attempt in retaliation for her activism because she's so pro, like, women's education.
Yeah. Talk about nurturing. Talk about caring for women. Talk about standing up for what you believe in. Huge.
But get this. She fucking survived. And then once she did, she wrote a book about it. She called I Am Malala bestseller. And then later got to write the screenplay for her own documentary called He Named Me Malala. Meanwhile, getting accolades. Still an activist. Still standing up for education. All of these things. Still trying to promote just like the growth of young women, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's like a real life superhero.
Yeah. Our real life Sailor Moon.
Yeah, just to be really, it's like when you think of superheroes, you think of
Sailor Moon. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, standing up for other people. And that's like what it should be in its best. And just to have that like wholeness of heart at so young is so crazy to me.
It feels like the archetype of the cancer is the crab, you know? It's like hard shell with like your little scary pinchers and then soft center. So it's like the soft center is this like this need to like protect and love the like, you know, the women in her community. And then these like pinchers of being like, and fuck you, Taliban. I'm going to fucking live. You can't fucking hold me back, you know? I think that's cool. Yeah, it's like this fierceness that, you know, of being like, I'm a fighter. You know, Christina Aguilera, you can't keep me down. Like, I love that.
I can't imagine how her life is day to day. Like, how you must be like so afraid and so powerful just to fight through all of that. I don't know. It's amazing.
Do you think she still is like afraid every day?
Because like this happened. I don't know.
For what it's worth, the assassination attempt was in 2012. So it's now been like a decade. I wonder if she still like has like, I mean, like, does she still have like bodyguards and stuff?
I'm sure. I mean, I don't even know because it's like, I don't even know the answer if she was afraid before this because she still was fighting for what she believed in always. Like she never gave up. And I think that's really cool. Do we want to look at any of the other astrology in it?
Yeah, I was going to say a little astrology moment. Both her moon and her Mars are in Libra. So like her emotional side, I think that Cancer specifically are very impacted by the moon because they are ruled by the moon. So it's like when you check out those lunar placements, if you're a Cancer, like you might feel particularly attached to your moon side because it is your ruling luminary. So in her case, it is Libra. Libra is very much a sign about like fairness and equality. And it's like, I like that she was like looking around being like, this shit is not fair. Like, I deserve an education. I deserve to fucking go to school just like every other person, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's cool. And same with her Mars. Her Mars is like, you know, your Mars is your energy. It's what are you putting your passion into? And hers is equality. She's working towards the equality of humanity. That's very Libra to me. Coupled with that nurturing, you know, warm Cancer sun, I think it makes sense. It's like, that's your destiny, you know? Her destiny is intimidated. To fight for equality.
I'm very intimidated by Malala. I mean, I have to say it.
I could not hang. I feel like I'd make shitty jokes to Malala and it'd be like, this isn't working.
I think I literally started this with a shitty joke. I don't like I would just be like, I'm so sorry is what probably I don't even know what I'm sorry. But you know what? She would be so nurturing. She would care about me so much that it would all melt away. All my insecurities would just melt away.
Oh, I that's can't a real say life that's superhero. True, but I can't say there's any person who can truly make my insecurities melt away, but maybe it's Malala. I don't know.
I think she's a good contender, for that. Or maybe I don't even need to put that on her. I don't know. I hope she's having a good day is all I can say. I'm really grateful for you, Malala, and I'm glad you're number 9 on our list.
Okay, someone who I think I would have more of a soul connection with is number eight on our list.
Let's do it. George Michael.
Oh my God. We love George
number
Michael.
Number 8, most iconic Cancer. I'm very excited to figure out, like, hear more about his, like, cancerness. Because, okay, let's talk about this. One of the best-selling musicians of all time.
Yeah.
Faith. Everybody, go listen to Faith right now. Then come back. You're in a great mood. You're not in a bad mood at all.
Okay, but more specifically, watch the music video of Faith featuring the 5 supermodels of the time, one of which we already talked about on our Top 10 Geminis episode, Naomi Campbell. It's incredible. The video for that is incredible. I'm thinking of the Freedom video.
Yeah, I was like, Freedom.
It's not.
Take a little moment today in your day and listen to some George Michael music. You know what I mean? That's all we can. I feel that this is joy pounding out of our bodies. Wake me up before you go. Let's talk about this. I mean, come on.
Joy.
Just absolute joy. I mean, he was truly why, you know, he is iconic and makes this list a iconic gay icon who was just contributed to everything. Like, I don't know, at that time, it again just was brought with joy.
Yeah, a lot in there. He was very much, I think, the subject of a lot of discrimination in like 90s UK, and like had a lot of shit go down in terms of him coming out and having to do that publicly. But you know what? He gave us fucking bangers along the way. And he's so funny. I think that the thing that makes him an iconic Cancer for me is that he has so many interviews that you can go watch. And he's so honest and authentic to like himself. You know, like he has, oh my God, I wish that we could pull all of these quotes because he has a lot in there, especially after he's like really out, where he's kind of like, fuck everyone. I'm just going to be myself. This is fucking bullshit. Like, all of this judgment, all this shit that I went through in, like, the early part of my career is so bullshit. And he, you know, he went through a lot. He dealt with some, like, substance abuse issues. But, like, he was so funny about it. Like, at one point he was like, yeah, I'm really down a lot on my, like, weed consumption. Now I'm only smoking 25 spliffs a day. And I was like,
as opposed to, like, 52. I know.
Oh, my God. But like, I admire the honesty, you know, like I admire the ability to go on record and be like, whatever, this is who I am. Yeah. This is where I'm at in my journey and I'm working on it, you know?
Yeah, no, completely. Very open, very honest. And like to have to go through so much that I think that's kind of what I mean by being like iconic for there's a lot of like he walked so blank could run. You know what I mean? Like there's so many people who went through.
Who did you fill in the blank for?
I'm trying to think.
I went to Sam Smith for some reason. I think as like a soulful like UK singer.
I mean, talk about voice. My goodness. Yeah, and just being who you are. I mean, Sam Smith talks about that and I mean, a lot of his music, like just being who you are, I think is really important to these people. I mean, Elton John is like talked about George Michael being like he was not only like a singer but one of the most like kindest people, and I always find that very, I don't know, just really amazing when people can say that about other people who have been so in the public eye and have been shamed in really hard ways for a long time. But to have this community around him, I think was really beautiful.
No, yeah, it's nice, I think, when you see celebrities be like, like express their own love for other celebrities, like, do you know, like I don't know, I enjoy that. I remember when he died, like on Christmas, was so fucking sad, and then they did, I think, at the Grammys, a tribute to them. Adele was like so upset because she had this like false start where she was like, no, I fucked it up, I can't fuck up the George Michael tribute, I love George Michael, like I have to do this right. And she was like, I'm sorry, can we restart, like in her little British voice. And then she's like all upset, and then like she does a beautiful job.
Yeah,
and it's like, yeah, I'm glad that she did restart, I'm glad that we have this beautiful tribute.
Yeah, and I don't know. I want to do right by him, and I hope people moving forward, I think it's the best thing to say. Like, it can bring joy into your day, and how cool that somebody could do that so iconically, like huge for to be one of the best selling musicians of all time. It's just crazy.
All right. Now we're going to bring it back across the pond. We got number seven is a doozy.
Oh, man. Back to America for better or worse. Who knows? Number seven.
America's Tom
Hanks and Tom Cruise. America's Toms. I'm addicted to how we said that. We should not change it. We said no. Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise, America's Toms. That's what they bring to us. Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise equally tied for number seven, a most iconic cancer.
They are America's Toms. They are our Toms of choice.
Who do we even talk about first? Do we talk about them both? We just let people guess. Which one was in Mission Impossible? 3, 2, 1, go.
Hanks. No.
Which one was in Carly Rae Jepsen's music video, I Really Like You, at the suggestion of her manager, Scooter Braun, who we do not like? Which Tom was this? 3, 2, 1, go.
Tom Hanks. No, for real though, if you care about Carly Rae Jepsen or if you care about Tom Hanks, you should go watch the I Really Like You music video. It's like kind of wholesome. I don't know. It's kind of nice.
I saw Carly Rae Jepsen at Coachella this year, and it was so fun. She's so, like, tiny and cute and, like, dance. It was so fun to watch her dance, and she was great.
She's great. She's great.
What's her sign?
She's a Scorpio.
I love that we've made our Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise about Carly Rae Jepsen. I think that's good. Okay.
Okay. They're cancers in such different ways.
Yes.
I think with Tom Hanks, we are filling our need for a parent. You know, cancer is the sign of, like, the mother. I think that, like, it's such a nurturer, so caring, so warm, so much about, like, yeah, just, like, caretaking and predicting others' needs and making sure the vibe is right, being gentle. All of that, that's our Tom Hanks. That's our Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is America's dad.
Well, we are all Chet Hanks and Colin Hanks in that way. Does he have other kids? Oh, my God.
He probably does. He seems like he's got three kids.
Those are the only two that I resonate with given day.
I can't picture him with a daughter. Can you picture Tom Hanks with a daughter?
I don't know. I think I can picture Rita Wilson with a daughter, but I don't know. I don't know about Tom Hanks. But yeah, he's definitely America's dad. And he, you know, we just talked a lot of shit about him last week on our episode. Cis men will do the chores this week. So go listen to that if you haven't already when we were breaking down Elvis. But I think I still like Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, okay. I think that part of what makes Tom Hanks such an iconic cancer is that he taps into my nostalgia as a millennial in that, like, when I was coming of age, learning how to, like, make memories, that's when he was in his prime, you know? Sleepless in Seattle, Forrest Gump, like, all of these movies that were, like, TBS, like, just, like, on loop at 5 p.m., like, in the middle of day. Like, those are all Tom Hanks movies. And so it's, like, in my mind, he's permanently frozen in, like, You've Got Mail, you know? As, like, him in his 30s being, like, a nice guy, you know? Like, that's Tom Hanks to me.
We grew up closing our eyes and seeing Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Hearing his voice.
Didn't he become a famous actor because he, like, wrote a letter to somebody and was like, I want to be an actor, like he or something like that. He has a whole letter story. It's very interesting. Like, he wasn't. I'm loving that generation of people, like Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, like, who got super big and famous for everybody, like, when they were in their 20s. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear about you, Jacob Elordi and Zendaya. I like how I said it. I want to hear about Tom Cruise and Meg Ryan. But I don't know. I guess.
I mean, you want to raise the heat.
We all got to move forward.
Ryan Cranston is like 40, you know?
Right.
Or like Morgan Freeman has only ever been famous as an old person.
Right. Imagine Morgan Freeman at 20. I want to see him. I want to see him in August Wilson play at 20. I bet that'd be great. Okay. Tom Cruise. Let's do it.
Tom Cruise is a totally different kind of cancer. But so I think he is that volatile emotionality. And you know what's funny is both Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise are Leo moons, which I think really lends itself to that star quality, that actor leading man role vibe.
Yeah.
But Tom Cruise, though, I think he's the cancer that is jumping on the couch because he's so in love with Katie Holmes. Like, he's He is the
when
chaos.
He yells at his crew because he's like, COVID is real. I invested $1 million into this movie. You have to wear your mask. And you're like, yeah, you are so right, Tom Cruise. You are correct.
No, I loved that.
That is the right. Yeah, that is kind of the right way to behave today. But yeah, you know, there's the Scientology of it all, which is,
yeah,
you know,
there is that.
There's
you
some
know,
weird stuff in there.
It's yeah.
There's
he
some
is
weird
definitely
stuff in there.
Scientology's poster boy, and that's something to reckon with in his legacy.
Something to reckon with. Yeah, that's why we're saying not everybody is the protagonist of their own story.
Whoa. I think Tom Cruise is the protagonist of his own story. You don't make that many Mission Impossible movies without being the protagonist of your own story.
Is the mission really impossible?
The mission is possible. The mission is possible.
I love this fact that he signed a 14-year deal with Paramount Pictures in 2006. Like, that's just like famous. You know what I mean? To be like, do you want to be a billionaire and be the star of everything for the rest of your life? Like, how are you like, no, I'm not going to sign that piece of paper.
Okay. So I have a theory that actually, now that I'm thinking about it, kind of ties back to him being a Cancer, I guess. I think Tom Cruise tried really hard to be a good actor in the 90s. And then he got his feelings hurt because he didn't get any acknowledgement for it. Because
like Oscar acknowledgement?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Like he did get acknowledgement for it. He got nominated for Magnolia, but Magnolia is like, he's great in Magnolia. He's actually he's really funny and he's great in Magnolia. And a movie by another Cancer, Paul Thomas Anderson, husband, also known as Maya Rudolph's husband.
Yeah. The most important role is Maya Rudolph's husband. Maya Rudolph's husband.
But also, I guess, a director on the side. I think that he got his feelings hurt. He like tried. He tried to do art films. He did that. He did Jerry Maguire. He did Risky Business. He did some things where he was like, I'm gonna like be an actor. I'm gonna come to Hollywood and I'm gonna be an actor. And then he like got a little burned. He was like, he did Eyes Wide Shut, you know? And then he was sort of like, hey, you know what like pays really well and people love me and they give me the attention I deserve? Fucking Mission Impossible movies. And then he was like, wouldn't it be nice if I could, like, be welcomed into open arms instead of being, like, oh, you're just, like, the, like, hot kid at the Oscars. Like, you're not a real actor. That's my theory about him, is that he got his feelings hurt and then got championed by Scientology into being a mission of being an action star.
I mean, you know, he does all his own stunts.
He does all his own stunts.
Like, and he's really proud of it. You know, he wants to let you know he does all his own stunts.
But that's cool. It's like kind of cool.
You are so more Tom Cruise and I am so more Tom Hanks.
We talked about this. Who would be better at a dinner party? It's Tom Cruise.
There's that question. Or who would you rather have dinner with? Just one-on-one. Different question.
Okay. They are different questions.
They're really different. Like, if I'm throwing a dinner party, honestly, if Tom Cruise came to my dinner party, he'd really have to wow me. And I feel like he would leave and I would be like, that guy was kind of weird.
I think he would leave and I would be like, guys, maybe Scientology isn't that bad.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't even know what to think.
No, I know it's that bad. I've seen Going Clear. Please. I'm mostly kidding. I don't know. I've been tracking Leah Remini's memoir. Come on.
Okay, here's the real question. Do they have dinner together?
Of course
Tom
not.
Hanks and Tom Cruise.
Tom Hanks wouldn't touch Tom Cruise with a 10-foot pole.
How do you think they would feel about being on this list together at number 7?
I think Tom Cruise would be like, huh. And I think Tom Cruise would be like, I think actually Tom Cruise probably cares about astrology. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I was gonna say something snarky and then I was like, wait, actually he's into Scientology and I feel like he would like being a Cancer. I feel like he would want to be higher.
Yeah, they would both want to be higher. Why would they not? They're literally like, I think
they're
very competitive actors, I think, for both of them. I think that they are actors who are some of the most famous actors in the world who are like, I want this. I want to be this famous. I want to do this big of things. Like, that's not easy to have all this shit on their shoulders, you know? I don't know. I have to say this thing because it's raging in my mind. I saw a TikTok about how Tom Cruise got a facelift for Top Gun, the new Top Gun. And I follow a lot of plastic surgeons on TikTok. I don't know why. I like to watch them talk about their days. And it was really interesting that he had a little scar behind his ear. And that was like him getting a facelift to be in. Like, think of how much shit you have to go through to put your body through to be the Mission Impossible.
Whoa.
It's just that. So now I've talked myself into Tom Cruise.
Oh my God. Wait, no, I don't even follow these people, but there was a while when my explore page was like a lot of plastic surgeons and it was just like me being interested in like they would do the celebrity thing of being like, yeah. Do you want to see? And it blew my mind. And now I'm like, oh, everyone, every mm-hmm. famous actress has had an eye lift. Yeah. Like people always talk about the nose job, and that's true too. Mm. Everyone has had a nose job, but it's also the eye lift. I was like blown away.
It really makes me feel more secure, I guess, just to know, like, I follow a lot of those pages. Like, I follow, like, Problematic Fame on Instagram, and it's just showing, like, the before and after edits of their photos. And I think it's really useful to show of, like, oh, yeah, not everybody naturally looks this way.
I honestly, like... I love when you find someone whose face is totally different. Like, I love when you find, like, just, like, a... like some extremely beautiful celebrity and then like the pictures of them as a child are like, oh, your face is constructed entirely. I'm like, whoa, this is Metamorphosis. This is that book Uglies. This is Hunger Games. Like, I love it.
Somebody who does that a lot, Ariana Grande.
Oh, gets a lot of plastic surgery?
Or just like changes, like a lot of the photos that she like are taken of her at red carpets are like completely different than like the photos that she posts online. You know, like just like really changing like big stuff about like her face. I don't know. Anyway, so that was Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise, American's dads. They are number 7 on our top 10 most iconic cancers.
America's Moving dad and America's daddy. Can I call Tom Cruise America's daddy?
I can't believe we got to this point. I cannot believe we got to this point.
Am I? Oh my God. This is Matt's influence. I'm not going to take it. Whatever. Okay.
Number 6. Anthony Bourdain.
Sorry, I didn't do it. I was scrolling.
It's okay. That's okay. I gave you a big countdown on everything. We're keeping all of this. Okay. Anthony Bourdain, celebrity chef, author, travel documentarian, who treated us, the people, to the world of international culture, cuisine, and the human condition is what he gave us as a cancer.
Absolutely. He gave us home-cooked meals. He gave us pathos. He gave us just, like, identifying with your fellow man. He gave us sitting down to, sitting down to a home-cooked meal and meeting a new friend, you know? Like, so much of his work was about connection and human connection. And I think that's awesome. And I think that that is so cancer. Cancer is like a sign associated with food, a sign like it's like I think of cancer and I think of just like, I don't know, like a big Italian dinner.
Yummy. Dinner, the word, I mean? Yummy. Yeah.
Yummy.
He's yummy.
Like a sharing style meal, you know, where you're passing around a bunch of bowls. Someone just like has a bunch of bowls full of some things are cold. Some things are hot. We're filling up a plate. There's Anthony Bourdain making conversation.
I've said that when I was in London and I was eating at the restaurant Dishoom, which is a really great Indian restaurant. And I would have such yummy food. And I was like, you know what? The issue with this restaurant, it's so yummy and filling. I wish I was in my bed, just surrounded by it, watching a movie. Like that would solve. And it's like the most trendy, cool restaurant. And I'm like, no, this would solve that issue. So, you know, Anthony Bourdain, famous food critic, also used the word yummy. That's how – I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
It's so yummy.
It's so yummy. That's how he would describe most meals. But he spent his life being really curious about other people, being curious about the human condition. And I think there's also something to say of getting so good at that, that you are sharing that with other people. Like you are documenting it.
I would like to say a little astrology note here. He has both his Mercury and his Venus in Gemini. And I think that that maybe lends its way to some of that love of travel. Also Mars, Pisces, just all of those factors of being like interested in humans and interested in adaptability and what makes us different from each other. I think that that all plays a part.
I want to read these two quotes that I wrote down about him that he said because I don't know. I just feel like they're really good to get to know him. And he would talk about like opening ourselves up to other cultures, which I find really interesting and which I find separates him from and making him very iconic, I think. So he had this quote about regard to criticism of Chinese people. And he said, the way in which people dismiss whole centuries of old cultures, often older than their own, usually non-white, with just utter contempt, aggravates me. People who suggest I shouldn't go to a country like China, look at it, film it, because other people eat dog there, I find that racist, frankly. Understand people first, their economic living situation. And I just think that's like, he understand people first is how he went about his life.
Yeah, there's also, we have another quote here. Regarding the myth that MSG and Chinese food is unhealthy, Bourdain said, it's a lie. You know what causes Chinese restaurant syndrome? Racism. Ooh, I have a headache. It must be the Chinese guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a whole This American Life episode about how like that MSG rumor got started, and it's very fascinating. Somebody was just racist and wrote that down in a science book and was like, this is Chinese food has more MSG, which literally isn't true.
No, yeah, it's also just like, I mean, people use it like a spice, like they use it like to add umami, et cetera, et cetera.
And I just think that's so amazing that Anthony Bourdain opened himself up to others. And I think that, you know, he shared such intense vulnerability with us. Like, there is a tragedy to his life, how it ended. And it's really horrible. And it's crazy that he could have brought us so much and given so much of himself.
And did, you know, like, I think.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean. And he did. He did do that. It's crazy that he did that. I mean, to be traveling, you know, 300 days of your year, every single year, just, I don't know, giving so much of yourself.
It's cool that I feel like he straddles this line of like travel badass, like celebrity chef, and like this like radical vulnerability. And just that's the kind of, I don't know, funny. Which, I mean, hey, you know what? He is a full moon baby. He is sun in Cancer and then moon in Capricorn. So those are opposing signs. And usually, or often, people born on the full moon are like, because they have this tension, these opposite signs, it gives them like a more well-rounded view of humanity. Like, a lot of the times they're people who have better perspective or an increased ability to just see things from all sides. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know. Capricorn moon, though, that holds darkness. Sorry, not to. Yeah. I don't know if that's trivializing.
I don't know. I think I like what you said about like radical vulnerability. I think there could be darkness in that. I think there's a lot of darkness in radical vulnerability. And I think that is kind of a tagline for this list. And I think what we're learning as we keep making these lists is it's fascinating to see what makes people culturally known, which I find very interesting. And it's almost like we're trying to solve a puzzle of some sort. Like, we're just throwing a bunch of stuff out there. We're like, okay, this is who this person is. This is what their astrology brings to it. What does this hold for their life and the world? And just trying to make sense of all these things that honestly are hard to make sense of. And there is no right answer for anything here.
Yeah.
We're just two silly little Geminis making a silly little list.
Well, like, yeah, but I think that you brought up some important things, though. Like, something that we ask ourselves a lot when we are making these lists is, like, why do we care? You know, why should we ultimately care about this person enough that they beat out every other amazing, important Cancer? You know, like
Selena Gomez.
Why is it Anthony Bourdain and not Selena Gomez? And right. It's that
I ask myself that every day.
I mean,
could Anthony Bourdain do Only Murders in the Building?
Could he? Look.
Could Selena Gomez open us up to new cultures?
I think he could, because you know what? He's the king of investigative journalism, and he's the thing, right? Like, he could. So maybe it could be him and Martin Short and Steve Martin doing a Hulu show together. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think, though, that why do we care? Why do we care about Anthony Bourdain? I think that because he is such an emblem of like human connection, truly, just that he is so. Exemplifies that thing of sitting down at a table with a stranger and finding what you have in common with them. And that is we're going to owe that to. We're going to say cheers to Cancers for that quality of.
Cheers to Cancers.
Cheers to Cancers for that.
I don't think we said a lot of that on our top 10 Gemini. So I really am liking digging out. Like, I feel like we're like digging little holes and we're like pulling out radical vulnerability.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we're halfway through. Moving on.
Okay, now we're in the top five. Oh my God, the top five.
Top five. Top five most iconic cancers. I think this is a good number five spot. Are you ready?
Yes, absolutely. Number five, Larry David.
Lawrence Jean David, born July 2nd, 1947.
Wow, you really don't hear about a lot of people born in the 40s that are still really relevant and like working today.
That are still making television that is, I'm going to say it, laugh out loud funny.
It is laugh out loud funny.
He that LOL, when you're saying LOL, funny. You mean Larry David. Larry David, you know, hot take, Larry David is funny.
Whoa, we said it here first. Larry David, I don't know if you guys have a billionaire comedian is funny.
Have you guys ever heard of Seinfeld, that like really small indie show? I don't think it ever got like barely picked up, but
no, I've heard of Friends. I haven't heard of Seinfeld.
Okay, Larry David, I mean, you know him and you hate him. That's kind of the vibe.
But I think he loves being hated, and that's part of what's great about him. Like, I think, you know, what we're talking about with radical vulnerability with Anthony Bourdain, I think Larry David is a genius of taking all of those little things, those most vulnerable, petty little moments where you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, oh my God, I hate myself right now. And being like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we put this on screen? Wouldn't it be funny if, like, we really, like, made a moment out of this? And it's amazing.
I wonder so much, you know, this man made a career out of complaining. So I wonder so much if he is even asking himself, wouldn't it be funny if we put this on screen? I don't even think that's it. I think he has some shit to work out with himself. He has to work out so much the right way to design a toilet that he can't even just think about it for himself on an afternoon. He has to hire a film crew to come and make an imaginary scenario to prove himself right or wrong. And sometimes he's both. Most of the time, he's always wrong, just to get those little ideas out of his head.
I see that. I get that, like, that balance of being, like, on the one hand, he thinks he's so right. You know, like, I think we see that in the characters of, like, the character he plays on Curb, which is Larry David.
Yeah.
And then also in Seinfeld, you know, we know that Seinfeld in George is based on him, which is, like, the biggest scumbag in the show, maybe. I think George is the biggest scumbag in Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like the joke is always on him, but at the same time, the joke he's making is always like, but I'm fucking, you know, I'm kind of right about this, right? Like, I'm like, you kind of think I'm right about this, right? Like, this is kind of bullshit, this thing I'm going to like rant on and make my point on. And this hill I'm going to die on. I fully believe this hill I'm going to die on.
Yeah. I think if you were to describe to me a character that was all the traits of Larry David, I would be like, I never want to hear about that person again in my life. But something about it, you know, there's charm, there's sweetness, there's hilarity. That's what it is. It is so funny that you're just like, oh man. And I do think this guy has a foot in on the joke, of course, which is why he has made this insane career. Have you read his play, Fish in the Dark? It's pretty good.
I
would read that. It's a nice little like afternoon read just to sit down. And I don't know. I like that he is always like, what medium do I need to work in now to make this funny? I've also read his daughter's book, Cassie David. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of just like reading if you were to watch the character from Curb have a kid to read her book. It's like, oh yeah, your parents are fucking crazy.
Okay. I hear really mixed things about that, so I'm interested.
I do too. It could be that mixed feeling, but it's like nonetheless, like her parent, like Larry and whatever his ex-wife's name is, are extreme environmentalists. Like they're very big about like no plastic water bottles ever in their house or something like that. And so like, and so she had to grow up that way very intensely. Like she was like, I could probably get in trouble for doing drugs, but I would really get in trouble if I ever brought plastic into my home. My parents would freak out.
Wow.
And that's just like interesting. I don't know, to grow up in such a weird way.
Yeah, that's like billionaire shit.
Billionaire shit. Billionaire shit.
That's cool for Cassie David. I think she may also be a Cancer, actually. That makes me want to Google it right now.
All good.
If I were her, I would hate... oh, no, she's a Taurus. I had to Google it. Sorry.
You would hate having your dad be Larry David.
No, I was going to say I would hate fellow Cancer Ariana Grande probably more than anyone.
Oh, but at this point, everybody's dated Pete Davidson. Like, I think there's just too many. There's too many at this point to even think about it, you know?
But she was the OG. She dated him before he was, like, worth dating.
That girl, Carly, who was on
MTV's. Shit. On Girl Code?
Yeah, on Girl Code. You don't follow Carly on TikTok. And
Carly's
just
Italian last name with an S?
Italian last name. She also just posted that she is on the Netflix special Pete Davidson and Friends. And like, I'm like, oh, so you're on your ex-boyfriend's Netflix special?
Whoa.
Hollywood is weird. Hollywood is weird.
Whoa.
Okay, wait, we got to shout
still
out.
I still think I would hate Ari more if I was Cassie than if I was Carly. Because clearly Carly and Pete are on good terms if she's going on his Netflix special.
What about Kim? How do you think Cassie feels about Kim?
I think Kim is, at this point, she's an eye roll because she's already, like, built up the resentment. So it's like all these, anyone past Ariana is like, whatever. But Ariana was the fresh wound of like, whoa, we were engaged. We got, this is Cassie David, daughter of, just in case no one knows this, Larry David's daughter, Cassie David, dated Pete Davidson for like 2 or 3 years. They got engaged and then... Like 2 months after they broke up, they break up, engagement's broken. So sad, so tears.
You know, Pete Davidson just has a bunch of engagement rings. He's like, who wants this one today?
Yeah, he's got them on deck. So then like 2 months after they break up or something like that, we're going to fact check this. He gets engaged to fucking Ariana Grande. Can you imagine the heartbreak? That's like the beginning of a rom-com. That's like so comically depressing, of being like, my engagement ended and my ex-fiance is now engaged to one of the most famous singers in the world right now.
The only explanation for Pete Davidson's life is that he has his real life fairy godparents who just follow him follow him around and grant him his every wish. So
I wish I had an engagement ring right now.
His almost stepdad, Larry David, iconic number 5 Cancer.
What is that? Okay. Wait, what was that family dinner like?
Oh my God.
What do you think they ate? New York foods. He's from New York. God. Oh my God.
Bagels. They just had bagels for dinner, probably.
Just bagels. Okay, we got to talk about some other. I think Larry David is, again, one of those. He walked so Mindy Kaling could run. I don't know. There's some really big Cancers that have done similar things in comedy. Like, those are two iconic television showrunners that have generated so much television. That is wild.
Yeah. I think another huge Cancer comedian to mention is Will Ferrell. I think Will Ferrell might be, I don't know, he's definitely one of the most important comedians, I think, in my lifetime, at least.
In existence,
And, you know, look, he's not 80. Maybe when Will Ferrell's 80, he'll be on our most iconic Cancers list. But in this moment, Larry David is the one who is 80? We're gonna whatever 2022 minus 1947 is.
I don't know. We're going to have to figure out how old he is.
God. I hate math.
Okay, so Larry David, is there any more astrology we need to go over here?
So Larry David, Capricorn moon. Capricorn moon knows darkness. Capricorn moon is dry. Capricorn moon is like very pragmatic and like can be sarcastic and is logical. And I think that's all very fun. But I will say another thing that I think lends itself to the comedy of it all is that Larry David has a ton of stuff in Gemini. He's Venus, Mars, Uranus, and North Node in Gemini. So he's a little goof. He's a little goofster. I love it.
You know what Larry David would say about being number 5 on this list? He would say, yeah.
All that astrology stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it real?
I think he would say it's pretty, pretty good.
it's pretty good.
I wish I could do it. No, I'm not going to do it. All right, time for our number 4, Meryl Streep.
Born in 1949. Talk about the 40s. Talk about the 40s. Born June 22, 1940. Oh, she is right at that start of Cancer. Meryl Streep, aka the best actress of our generation.
She's the actress. True. When you're thinking of an actress, you say
you know
Meryl.
What
one word.
Meryl.
One word. You don't need Streep. One word. It's just Meryl.
You just know who Meryl is. She's Meryl.
She's Meryl. Her real name is Mary Louise, but she's Meryl.
I was about to say that. I didn't know that till now. Meryl.
Just Meryl.
If Meryl is in the movie, everything changes. You know what I mean? Like, everything about the movie is that it was here, and now it's here. And now it's, you know, it's just, I think Meryl is the actor's dream. Like, how her life, she, like, kind of figured out she liked acting in college, and then went to Yale, did all these freaking old school Shakespeare performances, did Shakespeare in the Park, became Meryl. Like, she just worked her butt and stayed consistent and was like, look, I'm the best actress. I don't know. I'm just like the actress. Like, I was blessed with this gift of acting, and I have to do radical vulnerability and share it with every person.
Yeah. An absolute transformer, a performer. You know, she's something I think is cool is that she's amazing with accents, you know? I think that kind of goes along with our thing about how I think cancers are really good at impressions, you know? Like, Chloe Fineman, who's one of the a newer member of SNL, is also, like, an amazing impressionist. You know, Kate Berlant, who we talked about last week, amazing with impressions, you know? I think part of cancer is the cancer sense of humor is impressions. It's getting in touch with your fellow man and, like, doing their silly little voices, and it's not even mean, you know? It's just kind of like, it's just silly.
Meryl, I mean, let's just name some movies. Sophie's Choice, Mamma Mia, Iron Lady, Devil Wears Prada.
I have a really good Mamma Mia thing. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
Okay, so Meryl, this is so fun. I learned this recently from my friend Olivia Craighead. I need to give a shout out here. So Meryl was almost Evita, the, like, Madonna movie role. But there were all these talks about it, and then the role ended up going to Madonna, and so then she got asked about it in a profile for the New York Times in March 17th, 1991. I'm giving you the date because she has since denied that this ever happened, but it is printed in New York Times. So then she got asked, so the role went to Madonna, like, how do you feel about that? She said, I could rip her throat out. I can sing better than she can, if that counts for anything. I was like, holy fucking shit, when I found out about this. Then later on, she, like, I think it says in, like, her Wikipedia or something that she has since dismissed this as internet lore. So perhaps I am perpetuating this as podcast lore, but the reality is that there is, you can go look this up. I'm telling you, March 17th, 1991, New York Times, she said in an interview that she would rip Madonna's throat out because she could sing better than she can. And it's true. I'm going to follow it up and say it's fucking true. I've seen Mamma Mia. I've seen Ricky in the Flash. Meryl's a good singer.
Meryl's a great singer. She was just in The Prom. Was it called The Prom or Prom? I don't know. The movie, like, a year last year with Keegan-Michael Key, and
Meryl played Keegan-Michael Key's love interest. And I was just like, who pitches this to Keegan-Michael Key? That was like, hey, you're going to be in a movie, and guess who you're going to kiss? Meryl. Meryl Streep.
I think he freaks out of that news and is like, fuck yeah.
And he's like, fuck yeah. Oh my God. I think a fun fact about Meryl is she tries on her wigs for the role before she decides if she's going to play the role. Like, she's like, she, like, gets offered, I don't know, Julia. And she's like, well, I got to try on the wig. Like, I feel like there's some sort of, like, metaphysical dance that happens or something between her and this wig. And they spend time together. And then she decides.
I just picture, like, Disney moment, like, the leaves start to swirl around her. Yes. And it's like, she becomes Julia.
She becomes Julia Child.
And you know what? She did become Julia Child. She's an incredible Julia Child.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't think, you know, if anybody out here is like, Meryl's fine, you know what? You hate yourself.
What? Okay. That's how you feel. You know, it's similar about that.
Because it's just like, how it's crazy to have somebody that you're just like, is the actress. And it's like, what wild times that we live in where we can all agree Meryl is the actress. And it's like, if you're going to not agree, you're just not agreeing to fight, you know? And hey, I love to not agree. I got some hot takes like that too. Not going to say them right now. Don't worry. Keep listening to this podcast. You'll hear them. But, you know, I don't know. In 2014, Barack Obama bestowed her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, one of the nation's highest civilian honors. You're just a civilian. You're not a civilian. You have to be Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep.
Whoa. Intense.
Intense.
I mean, yeah. And also, I just want to say, Cancer is a great sign for actors. Like, as we're saying, she's the actress. She has competition here. Like, I think that, I mean, we've talked about how Cancer's true skill is, like, expressing their emotionality. You know what that lends itself to? Fucking acting. We've got some really amazing Cancer actors. We got Margot Robbie is a huge one. Natalie Wood, Sofia Vergara, Olivia Munn. Not that anyone's
Kristen Bell, because Kristen Bell's so known for just, like, crying all the time. I don't know.
Her and the fucking sloth. Yeah.
There's some resentment there. We don't need to.
Look, I've told you I'm not a fan. I guess I'm fine with saying that on the pod. It's okay if it's part of Uncut Gemini's canon that Courtney is not a Kristen Bell stan. Welcome to Uncut Gemini's lore.
Well, it is very interesting to think about. Like, last month we were talking about a lot of musicians, you know, Paul McCartney, a lot of rappers, Biggie, Tupac. And so now to get into a lot of strong female actors as Cancers, it's just an interesting commonality that we are just throwing out there.
Sandra Oh, Priyanka
Chopra.
Oh
my God. Oh, like, my God.
God, there are so many bangers. Ginger Rogers? Whoa.
Sandra Oh and Meryl Streep need to be in a movie together. They need to be in a movie together right now. Right now. What should they be? They should be. Well, Charity was an investigative journalist, basically, in Killing Eve. I don't know. They should do something. I think it would change everybody's lives.
I would love to see Sandra Oh queerbait me more. You know, I'm fine with that. You're talking about, like, Keegan-Michael Key getting the call of being like, you're going to kiss Meryl. I want to see Sandra Oh get that call. Being like, you're going to kiss Sandra Oh. Meryl. Kiss they do, like, a Holland Taylor, Sarah Paulson style couple. I would love that. I would absolutely eat that shit up. That's what I want Meryl's next project to be.
Maybe they're just, like, a normal couple living in, like, the woods or something. They live in Vermont. They pick apples throughout their day. And then something scary happens. That's what happens in the movie. Something scary. It's kind of a horror. It's kind of like a mindfuck movie. What are those called? A psychological thriller. It's a psychological thriller. And then suddenly Meryl, there's two Meryls. And she has a twin. And the twin is also played by Meryl.
I feel like you're, like, rolling dice. And, like, you're, like, pressing, like, you're refreshing a generator of words.
She has a completely different personality because we want to see Meryl's accents. So she gets to do a whole other accent. And is this
Split?
Yeah. And then Sandra Oh also becomes another person. And they have to decide who is going to fall in love with which one.
Wow. I mean, yes, greenlit for me.
That is my pitch.
All right. No notes.
Warner Brothers, no notes. No notes on Meryl
I'll get
Street.
Writing, you know. Open up my final draft right now.
Oh, man. Okay, Meryl, we love you. We're so happy that you made number 4 on this list. I can't even. Who's going to be what? 3, 2, and 1? I'm shocked.
Wait, I would just like to say, if for any Meryl fans out there, my favorite Meryl movie is Kramer versus Kramer, and I think that everyone should go watch it. Do you have a favorite Meryl movie?
Probably Devil Wears Prada.
Devil Wears Prada. And Mamma Mia. Ugh. Okay, well then, actually, my favorites are Mamma Mia and Devil Wears Prada, but I'm putting Kramer versus Kramer up there as a shout out because I had not seen it until a few years ago. And
me
I don't
too,
think
yeah.
enough people are talking about it. And she's incredible in it, and she's gorgeous in it, and her performance is just... It's amazing.
Yeah, she's so good. I mean, I've heard a hot take that she's not, like, in that movie enough. I don't know if she won supported actress or main act. I think she won lead for the Academy Award. I'm not sure. But yeah, I've heard that critique. But, like, to be such a good actor that you are felt throughout the entire film, even when you're not on screen, that's what Meryl brings to us. Every role she is, you feel her pulsing underneath. And I think for this new movie with Sandra Oh and Meryl, you will feel her many times.
Oh, man. Yeah. And now on to someone who can also get you in your feelings.
Oh my God. Wait, can we just take a pause? Can we just take a pause real quick just for ourselves? Let's just take a deep breath. We're about to do the top three. The top three are...
Oh my God, our top three. Oh my, they're intense.
Oh my God.
They're doozies.
They are doozies. All right, let's do it. Doozies in a great way. 3, 2, 1.
Lana Del Rey.
You guys are all going, you know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. You know what you're doing to yourself. You're going, you're nodding.
You're like, you're that's an you're iconic answer.
That's an iconic
answer. And you know, this one is hard for me because Lana Del Rey pretended she was a Gemini for many years publicly. She stated on a podcast that she was a Gemini. She gave out the wrong birth time and said that, and that had like a false birth chart floating around for years. She would wear a Gemini necklace. This bitch lied, like straight up lied. When you interact with her content, you're like, this is a Cancer. Like, you know, when you actually approach it and you're like, oh yeah, okay, of course you're a Cancer. But I will say there were years when I was like, but she's saying she's a Gemini and we have to trust her for that. Reader, we did not have to trust her for that.
Here's the thing. When I'm talking about antagonist on this list, I don't think antagonists are bad. Let's talk about Breaking Bad. You know, that's the whole thing. We fall in love with the bad guy in the story. You know who we love? Walter White. You know who we love? Lana Del Rey. I love Lana Del Rey. You know what I want to do? Drive in my little car, listen to some little summertime sadness, listen to Venice Bitch, hear that long Jack... what the fuck is his last name?
Jack Antonoff?
Yeah, Jack Antonoff's long little chord ripping solo. I don't know. And feel like I am so in another world. I am the most nostalgic 50s queen that she brings to my life.
All I want to do is get high by the beach, get high by the beach, baby, baby, I think she taps into our most base desires, and that is generally like, I want to be horny. I want to be horny for being sad. I want to be just like generally sad. I want to be heartbroken. I want to like really feel that heartbreak and like not get better. You know, like I think a lot of her, the emotion that she taps into is like, no, I actually want to sit in this. I don't want to feel better. I don't want to learn. I don't want to grow. I'm actually really enjoying my bratty little baby moment here. So fuck you. I'm going to be over here drinking my diet Pepsi Cola and making bad decisions and drinking like an icy at the 7-Eleven and having romantic drama. And I think that's fine. And I think that like, oh God, she just gets it. You know, like she just, the girls who get it. Like she understands that we want that.
Here's the thing with her. I can't tell how much she is tapping into something that she knows we want versus like I can't tell how planned she is versus just being intensely herself. And I don't know if I care.
I think she's very much being intensely herself.
Yeah.
I don't think she gives a fuck about us. I think she's made that clear. I think she feels sad when we don't when we don't like her. I think she takes it very personally and gets her pride hurt. But I think that you are correct that she's not making anything for us. She's making stuff for herself that she understands that we will relate to, you know?
Right. Tapped. Here's a great, really, really good quote from Lana. Okay. She has said she was preoccupied with death from a young age, and it is her role in her feelings and her anxiety and annihilation. When I was very young, I was sort of floored by the fact that my mother and father and everyone I knew was going to die one day, and myself too. I had sort of a philosophical crisis. I couldn't believe that we were mortal. For some reason, that knowledge sort of overshadowed my experience. I was unhappy for some time. I got into a lot of trouble. I used to drink a lot. There was a hard time in my life. End quote.
Yeah. She's very sensitive, very much in touch with tragedy, you know, very much in touch with her own melancholia. And I think that she does a great job of expressing that. She has talked a lot about how, like, her generosity is sharing her feelings, you know? And I think it's true, you know? Like, there's a part of me that's like, okay, Lana. And then the other part of me is like, but it's so true. Like, absolutely, you're right.
Right. Help me work out this like antagonist vibe that I mean. I think that sometimes there has been some not like great stuff that she has done, like dating a cop or I don't know, just like lying about being a Gemini. Just something that is a little like I can't quite put my finger on it. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, I will say I think that Lana is very anti-hypocrisy and she makes that very known. I think she's very obsessed with authenticity and with that like. And she doesn't want to apologize for her, like, fascination with art, you know? And so, like, I think that a lot of the times she uses that as an excuse for people being like, hey, it's kind of fucked up to, like, really idolize the 50s when the 50s were pretty much only a good time for, like, rich white people. Right. And I think she's like, okay, cool, but I am idolizing fucked up relationships that are emblematic of, like, 50s stereotypes of, like, what it means to, like, serve your man and, like, be caught in those dynamics. And so this 50s aesthetic actually really works for me. And, like, fuck you if you don't get it. If you get it, you get it. And so I think she gets defensive and, like, digs her heels in when she's criticized about certain things. But it's because she can, like, it's because she's so artistic and because she's like, hey, I know because people are relating to me and because I have fans and because there's people who are giving me feedback on this music that I'm not the only one who feels this way and that I'm not the only one who enjoys, like, I don't know, feeling like a submissive little slut sometimes, like, just like shit like that. And I think it, like, drives her crazy when people get on moral high horses about admitting that. Do you know what I mean? And then she lashes out and says fucked up shit.
Yes. Yes. Maybe it's a publicist issue.
Yeah, she definitely needs a publicist. She needs to stop getting on her notes app and stop having, like, trigger reactions. But
yeah, you know, she was the only person who sang at Kim and Kanye's wedding, or, like, he talks about that, like, that he, like, picked her to sing and, like, paid her, like, house insurance or something. He has a rap about that. I don't know. He loves Lana. Like, he really respects Lana Del Rey. Which is wild.
Wait, okay, that's funny you say that, because something that I often think about, and this is kind of tied to her, like, desire to always be honest and authentic, is I remember when he endorsed Trump, she went and commented on his Instagram and was like, Kanye, like, Trump is a loss for America, but your endorsement is a loss for the culture. Like, I'm so disappointed in you. Like, sending this with, like, hope and healing. Like, she said, like, some, like,
they were friends. Like,
she sent it in some emotional way that was like, I hope you're getting better, like, whatever, kind of like a little passive aggressive. But I will always remember those words that were like, you, like, this is a loss for the culture. And I was like, hey, one, this ties back to our top 10 Geminis. Kanye is the culture. When Kanye fails, we all fail.
Yeah. Wow.
Also, then she went on her album and was like, Kanye's blonde and gone. Kanye West is blonde and gone. Is that what it is? I think it's on The Greatest. We're going to we're going to fact check this. But they had I think a falling out around Trump, because she was very anti-Trump despite dating that fucking Arizona cop.
Right. Right.
But she's just, this is Lana and this is Cancer. She's just like, she's a bitch. She's a lover. She's a child. She's a mother. Right. Like, she's so full of contradictions and she doesn't think she has to explain them. Because her fans get it. Her fans stan her.
Of course. I mean, now I want to go sit in the sun and cry and listen to Lana all day. I mean, I'm getting so, like, emotional about it. I love it. Like, I think that this is what keeps making our list. And this is what, like, I am excited about, is these people who are full of just stuff, like, contradictions. And I think we're seeing that with Cancer. It's like, there's been some tough emotions that people on this list have gone through, and literally tragic things that have happened to some of these people. And it's interesting. I feel like she is the one talking about it and a way we needed to hear.
Yeah, she's definitely very sensitive. And I think that that is her superpower, and that is a Cancerian superpower. You know, something I think about a lot is, like, I remember there was a time in, I think, 2019, fresh off of Norman fucking Rockwell coming out, when critics were coming out, and critics love that album. You know, like, that's maybe her best received album. Even
such
though
a good album.
It's a great album, but I don't think it's better than her album,
Blue Jean,
Born to Die. I think Born to Die is her best album, with the flower crown.
Oh, it's my
incredible.
God.
Incredible album.
Once I went to a party in LA where we were supposed to dress up as, like, famous LA people, and I dressed up as Lana Del Rey and nobody knew who I was.
That's
on that party. I know.
That's
I
on
was
that party.
Like,
that's
what?
Fucked up to happen, especially in Los Angeles. Come on.
Right.
Come on.
I was like, wore the flower crown, had a cigarette, you know, like, I don't know. What else?
That's all you need.
That's all you need, flower crown and cigarette, and you're like, oh, obviously you are
Lana Del Rey.
Lana Del Rey. Wow. Okay.
Okay, so here's the thing. This critic, Ann Powers, in her NPR review. It was so long and thorough and generally kind of a mixed bag. Like, it was like, I really appreciated this part. Like, this, you know, these are the things that are great about the album. These are the things that are, you know, not so great about the album. And Lana Del Rey lashed out. She was like, she took it very personally. Listen to this response that she ended up tweeting. Here's a little side note on your piece. I don't even relate to one observation you made about the music. There's nothing uncooked about me. To write about me is nothing like what it is to be me. Never had a persona, never needed one, never will. So don't call yourself a fan like you did in the article, and don't count your editor one either. I may never have made bold political or cultural statements before, because my gift is the warmth I live my life with and the self-reflection I share generously.
End quote.
End quote. I love it. I love how hurt she is and how she's trying to pretend she's not. I love how sensitive and like protectful and prideful she is about this art she's made, and how she's like not hiding that like this critic has really affected her and gotten under her skin. I love that, like, at the end of the day, she does know that her gift is her warmth and her self-reflection, because it's true. Like, and it's not always perfect. It's not always politically sound. It's not always correct, but it is her reflection. It is ultimately who she is, and who she is can be all of the things that that critic had described. The critic wrote that her music was sometimes needy, disempowered, self-sabotaging, and unwoke. And so the fact that Lana Del Rey like read this and was like, hey, fuck you, I think is great. Like, I love that. I love it. I can't help that I love that. I love when artists are like, fuck you, critic. I put my heart into this.
I think there's nobody like Lana. Like, we don't have somebody doing what she's doing in many, 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 many ways. Not just the music, but the personality, but the persona, but the ideas, putting them out there, and to have such a fandom around it. Iconic. Yeah. Iconic behavior.
We have a lot of Cancer, like, songstresses, you know, like, really, like, emotional singers. We have
poetic.
We have Ariana Grande. We have Selena Gomez. We have Solange. We have Kali Uchis. I think someone who Lana Del Rey is kind of the second coming of, just a little bit, is Courtney Love, because she is kind of this messy, I don't give a fuck, but also, like, emotional music, although Courtney Love is more, like, hard rock, whereas...
Hard rock, you know, yeah.
Whereas, like, Lana Del Rey is the softer, sweeter type. But I think that the authenticity is, like, it's key. It's like what you're saying, like, what we're discovering and making these lists is, like, the people who really make their mark and leave an impression and stay with us are the ones who were like, no, I get you. Like, I get that you are being yourself right now, and that's what makes an impact, you know?
Kiss me hard before you go.
Summertime sadness. If hey, what Kiss is Cancer season if not summertime sadness? Go.
What is it? I feel good. I feel like I want to drink some water, and that makes me feel good about Lana Del Rey.
I feel like I just want to go smoke a blunt outside the pool. That's like,
yeah,
that's like that is my Lana Del Rey vibe.
Yeah.
It's always just being like, I just want to vibe, you know? She just gets me in a zone of being like, I just want to vibe.
I just want to vibe. Okay. This is a good transition to our top two. I'm going to let you guys in. I'm going to bring you close. I'm going to bring you close to our process, our process throughout this. We have thought long and hard. We put in work to this. We put in hours of thought. I'm not even exaggerating. So here's the thing. Number two and number one. It was a close call. I do want to say it was close. And I think we are very honored to even get to talk about these two women, these two iconic women. Number two,
Frida Kahlo.
Frida Kahlo, born July 1907.
July 6th, for what it's worth.
And passed July 1954. An iconic cancer, a Mexican painter known for her many portraits, self-portraits, and work inspired by nature and the artifacts of Mexico.
I mean, she is, oh God, what can we say? She's an icon, one, in the very true sense of the word. Like, we've, you know, very much adapted the word iconic to mean, like, whatever, iconic, show-stopping, talented, blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, the true sense of the word iconic meaning, like, there are icons. Like, there are so many images that are very deeply associated with Frida Kahlo. You see a unibrow, you're like, okay, Frida Kahlo chic, you know, like.
Talk about flower crown.
Right? Like that Lana Del Rey, like Frida Kahlo. Was the originator.
So Lana could run. Theme of today.
It's, oh, yes.
But also, I think Frida Kahlo has such a, like, fortitude. She's so much about her values, you know? So loyal to her values. She is disabled icon. She was disabled by polio at a young age. She is bisexual. She's a bicon. She was polyamorous. She was married to another artist, Diego Rivera. And she was also very anti-capitalist. Like, she was really against, like, her image and her art being sold after her death, which is, I don't know, cool. She's just fucking cool, you know? I think that she had so much of her work is just, like, about exploring all of those big themes that we're all intimidated to talk about. You know what I mean?
Like gender identity, post-colonialism, gender, class, race in Mexican society. She also like talked about herself throughout her work. And she mixed a lot of like realism with fantasy. And she was really groundbreaking. And I don't know. That's a lot. Like that, like those naming all of those things is not like, oh yeah, have I ever done one of those things in my years of life? I have no idea, you know?
I would say we're artists. We're artists on this podcast, but maybe not on the same scale.
I am breaking boundaries in post-colonialism for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. That's me fighting colonialism. No, she's just such a bold thinker. I don't know. I think the thing, though, that makes her an iconic cancer is the artistry, right? Like, first things first is that she is an artist, right? Like, she is a person who expressed all of these ideas through her visual medium and through her challenges to society, you know? Like, we talk about gender roles and gender identity, and it's like we see that literally in like the scale of things and the way she's painted women and the way she's painted body hair, and like all of that is just super fucking cool, you know, and so unique to happen, you know. She's early.
She seems very unafraid to me. Like, something, the word unafraid comes up a lot. I don't know. Is there something in the astrology there? Like, she just seems so herself. I don't know. I guess coming off that Lana conversation, that's something we're talking about a lot, how Lana is presenting herself in society today of like, this is me and this is what I stand for. And I'm so curious what it was like in 1907. You know what I mean? Like, all this time that is hard to have an understanding of from not actually experiencing it, you know?
She's a Leo rising. We kind of discovered this on our top 10 Geminis. Famous people always have fucking Leo shit. They're always Leo placements. And I'm going to go through right now and just clock this really quick. Our Leo risings on this list, we've got Frida Kahlo. Lana Del Rey is a Leo moon, and it's on her midheaven, which is like the house of career. Meryl Streep is also a Leo rising. Anthony Bourdain is also a Leo rising.
Wow.
Tom Hanks is a Leo moon. Tom Cruise is a Leo moon. George Michael is a Leo moon.
What?
And Sailor Moon, we don't have her full chart. But like, those Leo placements are huge, I think, in famous people because it's so like, here I am, hear me roar. I am who I am, right? The sun is the self. The moon is the reflection, right? Like, and Frida Kahlo, if you are interested in the rest of her astrology, she's also a Mercury Leo. So the way she communicates, the way she is expressing herself to the world is also very much Leo. And Leo is passionate. Leo is very much, it comes back to that authenticity we've been talking about. Maybe that's what it is when we're talking about why our famous people are so authentic. Maybe that's another element at play.
Yeah, talking about radical vulnerability, a word that we, I think, brought up with Anthony Bourdain, is, you know, for me, Frida leans a little more on the radical, like on the radical side of that, those two words. It's like, I don't know, like that's like badass, just being who you are. And it was radical to be who you are.
I think it's making the personal political. Right? Like, it's like all of these things that were a part of her identity, being disabled, being bisexual, being in a relationship with another bisexual person, like being affected by polio, being a woman in a like patriarchal society, like all of these things play into the art she made, the activism she conducted, you know, like,
right.
You know, it's a different thing than like Aquarius activism is more like a concern for the collective, right? The Cancerian activism is more like, no, this is my existence is political, you know, like this is like, because it's so personal. It's like just being myself and like doing my best every day is a radical act, you know, because when you are disenfranchised, when you are in these like disadvantaged positions, it's like just putting yourself out there and making your opinion known and making your pain known is like huge. And it means something.
Yeah. And we've been seeing that so much as a culture having to deal with that in tough ways the past couple of years. And I just can't emphasize enough, this was somebody dealing with this in a society and in a culture that is so different than how we live now, you know, and it's really bold.
In her 20s and 30s and like, or 20s, in the actual 20s and 30s, you know, like to be all of those things and to be coming of age in that time and still end up making all of this radical art is, it's incredible. I don't know.
It's incredible. Well, that gets you our number two spot.
And that earns you number two. Shouts to Frida Kahlo.
Oh, again, it was a fight for number one. I'm curious. I just want to ask if there are any ideas about who we have left off. Who could be number one at this point? I'm curious where the thoughts are at. So just giving you a moment to kind of rack your brain about who is a culture icon. I have said it as a woman, who every person in the world knows who this person is.
Whoa.
Every person. Are we ready?
Yeah.
The number one spot.
Princess Diana. Princess Di, the people's princess, baby. Diana Spencer. Let's do it.
Diana, Princess of Wales. Every person knows Diana. Like, we can't get over Diana. Diana is all around us to this day. Okay, first wife of Charles, Prince of Wales, heir to the British throne. She's the mother of Prince William, Prince Harry. Diana is an activist. Her glamour made her an international icon, like exuding popularity, like so much popularity, but also public scrutiny she existed throughout her life.
Yeah. I mean, truly, I think what makes her such a like widespread icon is like, unfortunately, like the reach of the British monarchy, right? Like all of its colonizing and the fact that the British monarchy literally has a finger in every fucking continent.
Right.
And what we know about Diana is that she was not a fan of that. And so she got so much shit for that. She fucking hated Charles, understandably, this like cheater piece of shit husband who's now going to maybe be the king if QE2 dies, Queen Elizabeth II dies.
Yeah.
Although I have a feeling that she's holding out because she just wants it to be William. That's my theory. I think she's trying to like, I think Queen Elizabeth is trying to like really hold out because she's like, I don't want it to be Charles. Charles, you suck. You embarrass the shit out of us with Diana and Camilla. And so like, fuck
My theory is that they're hiding stuff from us. Like, obviously, like there's so much that like we don't even, I mean, freaking Meghan Markle literally pieced out. Like Diana walks so Meghan could run again. Saying it. But I mean,
she could run away to Canada.
So she could run away. I mean, the Oprah interview. All the stuff that we got a little peek into when Meghan was talking about how horrible they treated her and how racist they were towards her. And Harry talked about that, how he felt his mother was treated in so many instances. It was always just horrible by this horrible monarchy that, I don't know.
I wonder what it would be like to see Princess Diana do an Oprah interview in the style of Meghan and Harry.
Oh, let's get some technology because I want to see that.
People could so do deep fakes of that, like so fast.
Oh, God.
Eerie.
I know.
Eerie.
But Diana, I mean, she just lived this crazy life and she was like, okay, look, if I have to be this person and I have to be so known around the world, I'm going to do something good with it. And, you know, she was the first person who like publicly touched an AIDS patient, which was absolutely like, people didn't think that you could do that. And she was like, look, I'm the princess. I am the most famous person in the world. I'm going to do that. And it helped so many people. And she did a lot of like Red Cross charity work and just was always trying to do good for other people and using her platform for good.
Yeah. I watched a documentary about the AIDS crisis actually semi-recently, and it's remarkable, honestly, one, how late that happened in the AIDS crisis. Like, a lot of people had already died at that point. And so it was like, right, really people were pushing it under the fucking rug. Like, no one was talking about it until Princess Diana was like, hey, we need, one, you can touch people with AIDS. You're not going to get sick. And then two, this other thing she said was, she was like, Lord knows they need it. Like, she was like, said something really sweet about, aww, being like, people like who are going through AIDS like need hugs and touch more than anyone. Like, please go hug AIDS patients. And that, and like the support after that really skyrocketed in comparison to this like really horrible rampant homophobia that had been very much the dominating attitude about the AIDS crisis prior to that.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a mother of the world, like just to not only an infamous mother for being William and Harry's mother, but just of the people, like just, it was somebody that everybody wanted to be, everybody, like, you know, for better or for worse. That's the truth, is everybody was like, it's a fairy tale to be a person and then become a princess, you know, and then we learn all the issues with that. But that is how she was seen to the world, but then also had this horrible inner life, you know, and was just anorexic because of it, was afraid to go outside, and then eventually just wanted to live her own life when she finally got to get divorced from Charles, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the like real hallmarks of Princess Diana's, I don't want to say legacy, but like the life maybe that she led, is that like you can really feel how little she likes the attention. Do you know what I mean? Like when you see all of the public appearances, you can kind of tell how much she's like wants to go home.
Or and just was hard in the attention. I don't know how, I'm sure it must have been scrutinizing.
It was probably so overwhelming. Like I don't think you can even imagine that level of scrutiny. Exactly what you're saying. Like, and Cancer is, it's the crab, you know, they scuttle, they like to, you know, they're scuttling around, they like a misdirect, you know. It's, I don't think that they like having no control over their presentation, you know. I think they like to be able to control when they're going out, who they're going to see, what's going to happen, when they're going to go home. And I think being in the monarchy is just a total loss of that autonomy over your private life. And Cancer's very private, you know. Cancer's a sign of like, they really want to control their home life, you know, their homey.
Yeah.
They're a sign of domesticity.
I think this was the whole pitch for Spencer, the movie.
we're making Spencer right now.
Exactly what you just said. He was like, just a movie where it's just over a course of a couple of days. You know, she just wants to be in one place.
Oh. Did you see Spencer?
Yeah.
Just how I like kind of saw Jackie.
yeah. We watched that movie. It made me like Kristen Stewart more, I think. And I don't know.
I love Kristen Stewart. Big Kristen Stewart fan. Yeah. Who is an Aries playing our Cancer People's Princess.
People's Princess.
Something I want to say about her, her activism in relation to her astrology. She has very much an activist's birth chart. So she is this, you know, whatever, the world's mother as a Cancer, but has an Aquarius moon. So Aquarius moons are like that, when your emotional side is so tied to humanitarianism, like Aquarius is the humanitarian sign. So like when your emotionality is like tied to being like, I have to do something good for the world, like I have to consider my fellow man, I think that that made her really revolutionize the role of the monarchy, of being like, no, we need to like call attention to what's going wrong with our people instead of like fucking colonizing more people. Yeah. And then similarly, she is a Sagittarius rising. Sagittarius, very worldly, you know, very much concerned with culture at large. And that gives her a Libra midheaven. So her career house is beautiful, graceful, diplomatic, and as we talked about with Malala, concerned with equality. You know, Libra is the scales. Who's not getting enough? Who's getting too much? Right. And in terms of attention, that was, you know, she was shining a light on things that needed attention, which was the AIDS crisis. It was also landmines in England.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
something
yeah.
I always think about is like this. There are all these videos of her being like, hey, guys, there are still landmines in the UK. Like, I don't know why this always sticks out to me, but there are all these videos of her being like, I know the war is over, but we don't know where the landmines are. So be really careful.
And I think the thing is sweet. That she could have not done any of this. I know that's kind of like whatever to say, but the truth is she didn't have to make these choices to all these things we're saying, this activism that she's done. That was, I think, really from her. There's nobody like pushing, you know, I'm sure there's all these, you know, strings being pulled or whatever. But the fact that it was so revolutionary to do the things she did and stand up for the things she stood up for, it seems to like it shouldn't have been so crazy, but it was. That's just the truth. It was crazy. And it was her making choices. And I think it really shows where her heart was at.
And like, you know, you compare it to, I mean, the first lady is maybe our closest comparison of what that role looks like in the US. And it's like, what we have, like Melania's like be best campaign, you know, like stop bullying. Like she did a lot. Like she did a lot that like really mattered.
A lot that, yeah, Diana did a lot that really matters. I think there are people who come into roles like Michelle Obama, who's like, I know this role. People don't want me here. I am the underdog, you know, and they take that and they say, I'm going to be the absolute best I can be for myself because that's how I'm going to approach this challenge. And I think that's really brave. I think instead of just shying away from something, really stepping 2 feet deep into it, I think is, I don't know, really amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I feel like we're a little like archaeologists, just digging through, putting little pieces together. Because looking at this list, like, is, I think, an amazing list of amazing people who have many different qualities. Like, not everything about them is absolutely 1000% perfect. And that's what I think is so cool about this.
But what I love about celebrity astrology, I will say, is that when you line up a bunch of people and you're like, oh, I see it. Do you know what I mean? Like when you get all of the people together that you're like, oh, these are iconic cancers. You're like,
yeah,
OK, I get what a cancer is now. Like, I understand the cancer archetype now because I could look at this list and say, oh, right. These are all really artistic, like, sensitive, emotional people who have like a lightness and a magic to them that and are also very protective, like very much like claws out for the people they love, but in a very gentle, nurturing way.
And protective of themselves, protective of their point of view.
Yeah.
Which I think is, and I don't know, the word brave came up for me a lot. I think a lot of these people are like secretly brave. Like it is the crab, the image that you keep bringing of like, you don't know it until you kind of like crawl a little closer. Like, that's because that's why we're archaeologists.
Yeah, exactly.
This is again filled me with such like warmth. I don't know. I feel very warm and like I have a lot of good music to go listen to and a lot of documentaries to watch and learn even more about all of these people. I hope everybody else feels the same way.
I love it. Happy cancer season, everyone. I hope you enjoyed our top 10 cancers. I would love to see some rage in the comments about how we didn't include Lindsay Lohan. Oh, and I would love to shout out my personal favorite cancer, who is Alex Trebek, who I understand not everyone watches Jeopardy, but Alex Trebek is my favorite cancer.
And so, yes, please go and comment, follow us, Uncut Gemini's Pod. And then it really helps when you guys leave us reviews on Spotify or Apple Music, stuff like that. We want more feedback. We want to get better. This has been so much fun for us and we hope it's fun for you. So keep talking to us. Let us know.
Oh. And last thing, we're going to launch merch soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Eyes Woo-hoo. Peeled for merch, eyes peeled for a lot of fun guests coming up and a lot of fun stuff. We're working really hard to make this the best thing it can be. Oh, this was so fun.
Yay.
Yay. Have a good day, y'all. Bye.
Bye.
So here's where they went wrong. By the way, this is Ezra, and what a list! Yes, cancers. The creator of Sailor Moon was Naoko Takeuchi. Tom Hanks has 4 kids, including 1 daughter. Carly from Girl Code, who dated Pete Davidson, her Italian last name is Aquilino. On Pete Davidson's dating timeline, Pete and Cassie broke up in May 2018, and he officially started dating Ariana Grande also in May 2018. After only a few weeks, they were engaged, but they broke it off in October 2018. Larry David just turned 75 on July 2nd. The 2020 movie musical with Meryl is called The Prom. Also, in 1980, Meryl won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for Kramer vs. Kramer. And lastly, Courtney was right. In Lana Del Rey's The Greatest, she says, Kanye West is blonde and gone.